Blog Talk Radio.
Thanks again for joining us. I'm Patrick Connor of QueensberryRules.com. I should be joined here shortly by James Foley of BadLuckHook.com here on Queensberry Rules Radio. Today we are going to be recapping Saul Canelo Alvarez versus Erislandy Lara. Somewhat controversial fight from this past weekend. I guess it kind of depends on who you ask as far as how controversial it was or wasn't. I think you might even hear a couple of slightly different opinions from James and I today, but we'll see where we go with the discussion. I have to say, probably the most significant talk, or maybe the most talk of controversy from this past weekend, and actually here's James. I'll continue on with that, though. James, welcome.
What's up?
I was actually just in the middle of saying that probably the most controversial thing about this past weekend between Canelo and Lara, the scorecard.
The Levi Martinez?
Yep. CJ Ross Jr.?
Yeah. It seemed like kind of a stretch to me to call that a 9-3 fight. I thought there were certainly more rounds you could have given Lara than that.
I think the prevailing opinion, and, you know, rightfully so, is that it was a pretty damn close fight. Would you agree with that anyway?
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
How reasonable of you. Yeah, no, it was pretty close stuff. And, I mean, you know, it was surprising in a number of different ways to me. I mean, it definitely wasn't a high action, you know, entertaining slugfest or anything like that. And nobody really thought it was going to be that beforehand. So I don't really get a lot of the whining, but regardless,
that's boxing.
Both guys actually, what's that?
That's boxing fans.
Well, yeah.
Never been a fight where there's not whining.
No, it doesn't exist that way. No, not in boxing. But I mean, you know, even so, Canelo was able to deal with some of Erislandy Lara's movement a little bit better than a lot of us thought he might be able to. And also, you know, vice versa, Erislandy Lara was actually able to take some of Canelo's punches and weather the storm better than a lot of people thought he might be able to as well. So in any event, it was an interesting fight, and I think that was probably the best we can hope from it going into it as far as action.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that. I mean, I didn't think it was a – I think it was more a fight about what the guys weren't able to do rather than what they did, you know, and I just think that it's – to be honest, I mean, I thought it was kind of unfortunate the way that it played out. In my mind, it was, you know, pretty close to the worst possible type of an outcome, which is fine. You know, I don't think it hurts either of the two fighters going forward, but I just don't think – I think it would have been nice if this fight had provided a conclusive result, you know, and I just felt like – you know, Lara, while he had moments of being effective and you know, boxing, I just didn't think he really did enough to, you know, make a real imprint on that fight where we can, you know, say, well, Lara just totally mastered Canelo. That's not what happened. And at the same time, you know, Canelo mostly was following Lara around the ring because of the way that Lara chose to fight. And, you know, he landed some nice body shots and all that, but I don't think he really, claimed a clear victory or really did that much to unsettle Lara's rhythm, which, you know, mostly in the later, you know, middle rounds consisted of just moving backwards and trying to avoid punches. So I don't think it was a real great outcome, but at the same time, I think both guys come away from it. You know, look, Canelo was in there against a really dangerous fighter, one of the best guys in this division, and he certainly held his own, you know, and he was the aggressor the entire fight. And Lara, if, you know, for his part, I mean, he's got a tricky style. We all know that. It's not really a crowd pleasing or a judge pleasing type of style, but he has, you know, he can be very effective, and it's not, you know, he wasn't put down, he wasn't beaten up, and he, you know, fought on even terms with, you know, the cash cow Canelo, one of the other best fighter in the division. So I don't think either guy's hurt from it. It's obviously Lara's not going to skyrocket to popularity, but he wasn't that popular before the fight. And, you know, he's still going to have a big contingent that is going to argue that he won this fight. And it's, you know, he's going to continue to have that label of being a dangerous style and a, you know, voided opponent. And Canelo is going to go on, I think, to, you know, his popularity is not going to get hurt because he got the, you know, he got the official win, and he, you know, he didn't embarrass himself, and he basically fought on even terms. But, you know, I mean, I like to see if a guy's going to move backwards and box like that, you need to throw combinations, and you need to, you know, stop and punch and move, you know, and I thought Lara was just doing a lot more of the moving part. And Canelo, you know, wasn't able to, I think, get off enough to really, you know, stop him from doing that. Because it wasn't something I'm going to go, you know, come away from, you know, telling people about in years from now that it was this great fight, which is kind of unfortunate. You know, even though stylistically, you know, this was predictable, but when you have the two best guys in the division and two really talented fighters, you kind of would like to see them rise to the occasion. And I mean, I think in Canelo's defense, I mean, he was attempting to move forward and engage, and Lara, I think, just wanted to, you know, stylistically kind of, you know, try to dominate him in that way and try to get the win on points. But he just didn't do enough. I mean, on this stage, you really have to leave no doubt when you're up against a guy with, you know, the economic pull and muscle of an Alvarez. And Lara didn't do that. I mean, personally, I scored the fight for Lara when I watched it. But I wasn't, you know, I wasn't bitter about the decision, and I wouldn't go around claiming that Lara, you know, was robbed or anything like that. I mean, at the end of the day, that was just a close, you know, it ended up being a really close fight with a lot of close rounds, and you could have scored a variety of outcomes, and I don't think either guy came away from it any better or worse than where they came into it.
And I'm pretty sure that we'll probably wind up going into the, you know, merits of judging and protocols of scoring fights and stuff like that is, you know, as we go more into the fight. But I have to ask, well, there's always going to be some level of hyperbole based on whether or not you liked one of the guys that fought or whether or not you really disliked one of the guys, you know, and there's always sort of memes going around on Twitter and people posting pictures and shit gets blown out of proportion quickly, et cetera, et cetera. So, in any event, there were a lot of people saying that Lara ran. I mean, and not just ran, but straight up did a track meet. You know, even Canelo was saying stuff like, I didn't expect to come here and see, you know, like track and field shit and stuff like that. So, how much of that is hyperbole? And I know you just said that you kind of narrowly scored it for Lara, so obviously you didn't think a lot of that had held water. But still, how much do you think he should have stopped more and fought, you know, kind of, he didn't really seem to sit down on many of his punches, and we didn't really get to see much of his power, which kind of surprised
even when
me.
When he seemed like he caught Canelo clean, it had really had no effect. I mean, I'll just say this, like, I didn't appreciate what he was doing, you know, at all, yet I think that I just, my personal criteria, I mean, when he lands a few clean punches and then doesn't get hit for the rest of the round, really, I mean, I have to, I'm giving him that round. I mean, I don't like it, but I think that, you know, by the standards, I think, you know, there were rounds where Canelo really was just following him around and couldn't find the target. And I mean, would a better fighter have been able to do that? Yeah, probably. I mean, but Lara is very, very good. So it's not, you know, there's not many guys who necessarily can be effective against somebody who's choosing to fight like that. But, you know, aesthetically, I mean, I blame Lara for the fact that the fight really wasn't that exciting, and I didn't think he made the type of impression that he needed to really, you know, come away from this in a better position than he was before. I mean, he could have easily gotten that decision. I still don't know if that necessarily means that, like, Lara's a superstar, you know? I don't think it works like that. I mean, so, yeah, I gave Lara the rounds, but I still felt like I didn't like the way that he was fighting. I didn't think he – and as far as the running – you know, what – that really means is, like, you know, there's a lot of ways, you know, you can move backwards, you can move forwards, but the important thing is that you have to be throwing punches, and when a fighter seems to be strictly just moving out of harm's way in a very defensive style and nothing's happening, you know, you have to score those moments, I think, for the aggressor. But, you know, the rounds that I gave to Lara, I just thought that he had done enough, even though it was kind of the bare minimum. I thought that he had, in, you know, comparison to Canelo, I just thought he did done a little bit more to win that round. But, you know, when the decision was announced, I mean, I wasn't surprised at all, and I thought that, and I didn't, you know, I wasn't upset about it. I mean, I just think it, you know, to fight that type of fight, especially when he seemed to have an advantage early and be doing a little bit more early, and then to, you know, I don't know if it was the body shots that hurt him, and that's possible, or if it was just a conscious decision of thinking that, you know, I'm going to do my little thing, and then I'm going to, you know, he can't hit me if I'm moving backwards. I don't know. But I wouldn't say, you know, there's nothing wrong with fighting in that style, but, you know, you really have to be a little bit more active, and you have to be, the punches, I think, have to be a lot cleaner and clearer. And, you know, Rigondo did similar things against Daenerys, except that he would stand in his place, land punches, you know, avoid Nonito's punches and move, and emphatically won most of those rounds doing that. Lara just didn't do enough to where I can, you know, go bang the drum for him that he came up short on a tough decision.
Well, I mean, you know, early on in the first 3 to 4 rounds, I think that it was pretty, it seemed fairly obvious to most that either Canelo just kind of hadn't gotten going or something like that, but Lara obviously had the advantage early on. He was using his jab well. There was actually, I don't know, maybe half a dozen, if that, instances where he seemed to kind of step into his southpaw left hand, and he landed solidly, and it didn't do anything. But apart from those instances, I don't know if he just kind of, like, you know, used those as kind of, you know, testers, and then saw that Canelo wasn't buzzed, and he was like, fuck it. I'm not putting anything into my punches. I'm just going to move my feet. But regardless, it was just surprising to me because he's the type of guy that when he really gets going on offense, he seems to have a good amount of pop. He seems to be able to put his hands together well. He's accurate, et cetera. So to see him just not really ever sit down and, you know, stand his ground and try to punch out or something like that, it was a little bit frustrating, needless to say. And like you said, it just wasn't really aesthetically pleasing. But in a lot of the rounds, it was what he should have been doing, you know, to win the round.
Yeah, but I mean, he was pretty, you know, I just don't think he needed to have done that much more to, even if he wanted to fight in that style, you know, he didn't need to do that much more to, I think, have clearly won where the, you know, vast majority of people would have scored him the fight. I mean, you're talking about maybe just like a few more combinations in a few rounds, and all of a sudden I think it would be a consensus, like 8-4 fight for Lara. But either way, you know, it's not, I don't know, you can't, you know, fighting that style, as sparse as he just tends to be in the middle of those rounds, like, you know, he's never going to draw comparisons to, like, a great boxing masterpiece, like, you know, where somebody's really, like, I came to mind to thinking about Chavez Whitaker, because Chavez was kind of coming forward as the aggressor. Whitaker was, you know, boxing kind of backwards and sideways and just completely, you know, would stop and stand his ground and win almost every exchange and move. And it was just, that's not what Lara's getting, you know, didn't even come close to anything like that. And that was the type of performance that, you know, when you're a boxer and you're on this big stage against a fighter, and Canelo's obviously not unbeatable. You know, he's not, I mean, he has vulnerabilities. And I think the other thing about Canelo here is we can look at him and, you know, he's just not, if he ever will be at that point, you know, maybe, because he's still young and he's getting experience. And I think fights like this are good. But right now, the last 3 fights, I mean, he's fought world-class opponents. He hasn't blown anybody out. He hasn't, you know, he's lost lopsided to, well, I mean, he blew out Angulo, but he lost lopsided to Mayweather. The Trout fight, the Lara fight were both close. You know, I thought he clearly beat Trout, I thought, and looked impressive at times. But, you know, he's not blowing guys away. He's not. So, you know, if he will become continue to be a superstar, most superstars do that at some point, you know, from Oscar to Mayweather to Pacquiao, you know, you're eventually, I mean, we still haven't seen a dominant performance from Canelo against a real elite opponent. And that's another kind of side element of the fight.
Well, there was a question that I'm that was tweeted to me that I'm guessing was a response to what you had said about scoring the closer rounds to the guy that's the aggressor when not much is happening. And it was from Boxing for Free, as in the number four. He said, do you have to score them for the aggressor even when he's not effective and missing his big shots? And so that actually also kind of ties into the to something I was going to kind of ask next, which was, is Canelo improving as a fighter? And that directly links to what you were saying, I think, because through all of Lara's movement, his kind of, you know, wonky style, he's tough to catch up to, you know, he's tough to really catch clean when he's moving his feet, et cetera, et cetera. So all of these things, you know, do you think that Canelo's improving as a fighter?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. He's not improving maybe at the rate that the most optimistic, you know, of us might have wanted. I mean, I just think it would be great to see Canelo have a real, you know, breakout type of performance, because just the fact that he's been able to be so popular, you know, speaks to something. And if you combine that with the combat, if he ever does become a really great fighter, you know, that could be a guy who would lead us into an, you know, another age after, you know, the flag bearer after Mayweather and Pacquiao. I think there's improvements, and, you know, you have to look at the opponent. I mean, he's not fighting guys who anybody really has looked great against. You know, so it's, yeah, he's getting better. And the other side of the question is, like, some people will score those rounds for the aggressor. You know, like I said, I mean, there was a couple rounds where I scored him so close. I edged him to Lara, even though there were large stretches of those rounds. It was the very same rounds that some people accused him of running. And, you know, it's just a different philosophy. I mean, some people will score those. If he lands, like, a couple clean punches in the first 30 seconds, and then the next 2.5 minutes, nothing happens, but Canelo's walking forward the whole time throwing punches and trying to initiate, some people will score those rounds for Canelo, even if you know, I always usually score, like, the cleanest punches that I think land. And I kind of keep that tally in my mind. And if it's to one guy, I tend to give them the rounds, you know. But it's a perfectly legitimate argument to also say that, you know, Canelo controlled 2.5 minutes of the round. I mean, that's where you get the vague terms like, oh, his ring generalship and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, it is an argument to say, like, he was the aggressor. You're supposed to score, you know, aggression. And obviously it's effective aggression, and that's debatable. And at the same time, you know, Canelo wasn't completely impotent in this fight. I mean, he did land some good body shots. He did land some, you know, some decent punches, and did seem to trouble Lara at different times throughout the fight. So, I mean, it's just one of those fights that really could have gone either way, but I didn't find it. I mean, I found it interesting and compelling the entire time, but ultimately I think that was because I was hoping that at some point it would change. And looking back on it as a whole, I mean, it just really wasn't a great fight. It happened. I think that it's fair to view these guys as pretty close to equals now, and, you know, the way boxing business is, Canelo's going to go on to a huge mega fight with Miguel Cotto, hopefully. Everybody will look forward to that, you know, even people who scored it to Lara. I mean, it's going to be a huge fight, and Lara, he's still a top guy in the division. He's got cooked up with, you know, Heyman and the Watson guys, and so it's not like he's going to just disappear off the map now.
I think that
as far as the actual fight goes, what kind of was in question, at least as far as I can tell, and the kind of impression that I got, you know, just reading tweets and watching, you know, people give their opinions and all that type of stuff, it seemed as though some of the early rounds, for the most part, maybe three of the first four or all four of the first four, depending on who you ask, were for Aristelain Lara. And then the middle rounds is where Canelo started to, you know, win rounds back with body punching. And it seemed as though the last few rounds were what were, you know, in question. And I would kind of agree with that. That's pretty much how I saw it. And in the last few rounds, the reason why I scored it closely for Canelo, I scored it 7-5 at least, you know. I watched it twice. The second time I scored it a draw, you know. But that was after eating some all grass-fed beef and, you know, turnip salad. So it kind of depends on what my diet was that day too. But regardless, it was close. It was up for grabs in the late rounds. And what kind of separated it for me was that Lotto was really not stepping up to he didn't seem like he was in any hurry. He didn't seem like there was much urgency. And that's why kind of after the fight, when Ronnie Shields is saying stuff like, you know, we thought we had the fight won and blah, 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 that's really not what it looked like in the corner. Between rounds, it seemed like they knew that he really needed to, that Lotto really needed to get moving and, you know, start moving his hands, and he didn't do that. And that was my big issue with, you know, scoring the fight for him decisively anyway, although regardless, above all that, it was difficult to score. There were a lot of close rounds, so, you know, I could see pretty close scores either way. The 9-3 business is pretty
Lara had one big round in the, I think in the 11th maybe, and then the 12th, you know, he did some stuff in the first half, and then but Canelo was, like, more aggressive. I thought that was kind of an either-way type of round. Watching it live, I think my progression on my scorecard was something like you said, you know, I had it, like, 2-1 Lara, maybe 3-1 Lara, and then I had it 3-3, and I had it 4-4, and then I guess I just swung, like, the 11th and 12th to Lara and ended up 7-5, but I remember thinking, like, wow, I could see that being Canelo round, you know, maybe 6-6, 7-5 Lara. So to come out 9-3 for Canelo was kind of ridiculous, but, you know, it's just the fight left, so just didn't, you know, I didn't think either guy really made a great, you know, that kind of, like, definitive impression where you're just...
Yeah, we wanted a more decisive ending. But, well, that's what we wanted, you know. I mean, we were either hoping that either Lotto would out, well, you know, depending on who you're rooting for. But just
yeah, not
a decisive
hoping for
ending,
it, but I mean,
you
know? It
would
have been a better
outcome. I know you weren't hoping
right.
Lotto would do shit, but. Yeah.
Yeah, hoping first round knockout for Canelo.
Yep. Yeah,
I don't know.
But, you know,
interesting. You know, the thing is they've all fought, like, the same pool of opponents. And the only guy I really thought beat Lara was Carlos Molina, who looked, you know, he has another kind of awful style, and that would be a horrible fight. But maybe Molina will get – well, Molina's not going to fight Canelo because Canelo's going to have bigger things going on. But, yeah, it's hard to say kind of where they gave – you know, where neither guy was great on Saturday night. And
well,
the only
I mean,
time we've
you
seen,
know,
you know, we saw Canelo get totally blanked by Mayweather. So, like, where does it leave us? You know, I mean, I think Canelo had some disadvantages in that fight or whatever, but the bottom line is he just looked totally like a deer in the headlights, you know, and was just completely couldn't do anything, you know. So, I don't know. I mean, we always want, you know, in fights like this, I want, you know, you want somebody to go out there and grab the mantle of, like, a superstar, you know, really go out there and.
Yeah. Yeah, and, well, I will say this, though. If between the two, if one of them is going to be kind of like, you know, more easily forgiven for a not-so-great performance, it's going to be Canelo for a whole bunch of different reasons, popularity, money, et cetera, you know. But, you know, and on top of that, the aforementioned entertainment value of it all, that, for the most part, kind of gets heaped on Edis Landi Lada. You know, there's no question, really. And even though some of his tactics or whatever were what he needed to do to win or what he thought he needed to do to win, it just wasn't exciting. So, you know, if he's going to insist on using, like, the American Dream in his nickname, maybe I should suggest he switch it to, like, the Central American Dream. Or maybe, like, the American Dream during, like, a raging fever.
Yeah. especially in context of that he had – you know, kind of in the position that he was in as, you know, I'm the most avoided guy in the division, and Canelo's just this, like, artificial, you know, cash cow and hype job and fraud and whatever, you know, and I'm going to beat him worse than Mayweather did and all that stuff. And, you know, you lay that all out there, and I know it's like maybe some of it's just hyping himself up or promoting the fight or whatever, but point is, he got in the ring and really didn't go after it and didn't really assert any dominance on Canelo the way that he said he was going to. So in that sense, it was a failure. I mean, Canelo, he probably said some stuff too, sure, and he didn't really deliver, you know, an awesome performance, but he did go out there and tried to fight. And he gave the guy the fight. It wouldn't have been happening without Canelo. You know, he gave Lara career-high payday. So you can't say, you know, he ducked him. He gave him a chance. He got in the ring, and Lara chose to fight a very defensive style that he's done before. But you compare it to the Paul Williams fight. I mean, the guy did way more against Paul Williams and didn't get the decision. So, you know, to expect it to go differently against Canelo, who's much bigger star than Williams ever was, it doesn't, you know.
You know. Well, let me ask you
what the next logical question is. What's next for Canelo then? What's he going to do? Because
photo, hopefully.
Well, see, the question for me as far as the whole Cotto thing goes, well, all right, there is very little doubt in my mind that Canelo is – he's probably not going to be able to make junior middleweight all that much longer. He's fairly young. Well, he is young. He's, what, 23? So he's probably going to continue to go up and wait a little bit. He said the other day that he's going to stay 154, but, you know, fighters say crazy shit, especially when they're cutting weight. So if he does wind up aiming at Cotto, which he probably should, I think that kind of depends on what happens between Floyd Maidana too, which hopefully we'll get to later. Because if Floyd wins that fight, wins it decisively, et cetera, and he's offered a shot at Cotto, or takes a shot at Cotto, I guess, I don't know, however you want to word that, because Floyd will probably just demand it. Regardless, that fight would probably
happen. Oh, you thinking Floyd's going to jump in front of Canelo and try to fight Cotto again?
I'm thinking Cotto's going to wait and see what happens in the second Maidana fight before he makes a decision. That's my guess.
Could be
but
right.
Regardless, you know, it doesn't really seem like they're in any big hurry to get Canelo, you know, right back into the ring. And, of course, Oscar De La Hoya is talking about Gennady Golovkin. I don't know how serious he is talking about that, and I hope not that serious because I'm not sure I want to see that. But
let's remember, though, that, you know, with Floyd insisting on the lion's share of the purse and everything like that, I mean, was the payday really that much bigger for Cotto to take Mayweather against Canelo? Because Canelo's obviously a huge, you know, fan. He has a huge Mexican fan base. That's not going to be there. I mean, Mayweather has a great boxing fan base, and he gets, like, the loyal boxing customers, but we've seen those numbers have gone down a little bit in a couple fights, you know, and by far his biggest fight was with Canelo. So I don't know. It's just so hard to predict nowadays because everything's kind of gotten thrown. There's been so many pay-per-views. All the numbers were kind of disappointing. But on, you know, on the surface, Canelo and Cotto just looks like a huge mega fight in its own right, and one where Cotto would get a much bigger percentage than what he would get against Mayweather. You know, that's a 50-50 deal almost with Canelo. So it's like you take half the money in Canelo or 10% of the money against Floyd. I don't know. I'm not saying I'm not sure that, and from Cotto's perspective too, unless he has some real personal grudge, and he did do well against Floyd, you know, relative to other opponents, but do you want to go fight the guy who beat you once already or take on somebody new who's, you know, you may have a better, I mean, he may look at Canelo. It's just a perfect rivalry. I mean, I'm not totally opposed to Mayweather Cotto 2 on its own, but I think Canelo fight is just makes so, it's just too great of a, you know, fight.
Well, my only counter to that is I think that after beating the ever-loving shit out of Sergio Martinez for the middleweight title, Cotto might have a little bit more confidence in going into a rematch with Floyd Mayweather. And, you know, I don't really know about who would have leverage to do what at which weight and make that demand. I honestly have no idea because I think the poll is, I don't think it's like 10%, but yeah, you know, Floyd has the leverage, but not by a ton. I think that especially with the middleweight title potentially on the line, Cotto might have a little bit more leverage to work with, you know. But in any event, as far as any of that goes, there's still, you know, a little matter of Floyd Maidana too. And Maidana's going to come in there to fucking try to make rape, just saying.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I would love to see – I mean, I actually think it might be a closer fight, you know, or another close fight like the first fight and that Floyd – I mean, I think the common thinking is that Floyd's going to just has figured Maidana out and will do better. But, you know, there's a physical element to it too. I mean, it's not all mental. And when the guy's 36 years old, Maidana's pressure may end up troubling him again for a bit. Because you know, it may take those rounds to warm up. I think you could see a really similar fight to what happened – last time, I mean, favoring Mayweather, but I don't think it's automatic, like, well, he figured him out in the last half, so now he's going to just come out and go 12-zip. You know, I mean, a lot of what Maidana was effective doing wasn't, you know, it was just a guy coming at you throwing crazy punches from all sorts
exactly.
of angles. You know, so it's not
it
like,
wasn't like it was some type of trick that Floyd needed to figure out. He was being pretty basic with what he was doing as far as the actual strategy. He was just being a, you know, crazy-ass caveman about it, and so it wasn't like Floyd needed to figure it out. But also on top of that, I think that, you know, if this were a couple of years ago, I would probably say, you know, it's the rematch. You know, we've already seen Floyd in a rematch with, for example, Castillo, who is at right now, as far as, you know, present day goes, Castillo is a better fighter than Marcos Maidana, and he seems
to really
figure
good
out
fighter,
Castillo
and, but,
very well.
Floyd had legs
regardless.
Back then, you know?
Yeah, exactly. That's the point, is that it's not a few years ago. And so Floyd's age, the fact that he's still not a very busy fighter, et cetera, these types of things will start to make a difference sooner or later. And so, yeah, that's exactly what makes it interesting to me. And, well, you know, we've gotten a little bit off subject or whatever, but yeah, I'm down for Floyd Maidana too myself. Anyway.
Well, who do you want? I mean, you're all for the Cotto Canelo fight, right?
Yeah. Yeah, no, if I had my choice, I think that that's probably the fight that I would want the most, and I would want it at middleweight and whatever title, doesn't really matter. But I feel like Canelo is probably bullshitting about the whole staying at 154 thing. He sure seems like he's having struggles making 154 pounds. So if he were to fight Cotto at 160 or 158, whatever it is, it doesn't really matter. I think that that's just a better fight. That's probably the best fight that we can get between 154, 160 that doesn't involve Gennady Golovkin. And it's not going to, since he's at HBO and kind of has a wonky promoter thing going. So
and maybe
event,
Canelo's
yeah,
a guy
I,
who
I
is crazy enough to someday, you know, go to middleweight, and if he were to win that championship, maybe he would be. He would give Golovkin the crack at it.
I have I have no doubt that he would. Like that, you know, he himself, I don't know about all his handlers and managers and all this type of shit, but I have no doubt that he would have the desire to do it. I think he's proven at this point. And that's one thing to be said for him that a lot of people have said too, is that I think we need to give Canelo a little bit of a pat on the back for his opposition that he's had in the last few years, because he's taken on a couple guys that are difficult to fight. You know, and he's had relative
and with
success
a lot to lose.
Against all of them. Yeah.
With a lot to lose, too.
And keeps going on. So, you know, you can hate on him or whatever, then that's cool. But I think that you do kind of have to give him a little bit of a handshake for what he's doing. But, yeah, regardless, I think that that's probably the best fight to aim for him, money-wise and as far as having a legitimate chance to win. Because I think it is a winnable fight for him. I don't know what Cotto's going to show up like. It was such a weird sight to see him trash Sergio Martinez like that. So I don't know exactly what's going to happen in Cotto's next fight.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was probably somewhat misleading, you know, because I think Martinez was definitely compromised. But, you know, even if the Cotto who fought Mayweather shows up against Canelo, I mean, it's a good fight. You know, and Cotto definitely has looked more explosive against the limited competition, but Canelo's not, you know. The thing with Canelo, he needs to figure out, I think it's possible maybe his craft can improve a little bit, and maybe he can, you know, kind of find more openings to show more power at times. But, you know, right now I think he's getting in that zone of he's a really good boxer and he's a good puncher, but he's not doing anything great anymore against this level of competition. You know, he's not doing what he did again when he was just beating up the small guys and he looked, you know, so unstoppable. I mean, you have to remember, too, that, I mean, he teed off on Mosley, who always had a great chin, eventually got by Mundine, but, you know, he gave Mosley every punch he had. I think he's improved since then, but he didn't stop him. So, you know, I'm just wondering kind of like, you look at it just potentially, I'm just imagining this Canelo-Golovkin fight, and it's like, what can Canelo, I mean, what is his hope, to outbox Golovkin? That's really his only hope, right?
I would think so, yeah, because I don't, I mean, yeah, without getting too far into Golovkin's jockstrap there, yeah, I just don't really see that anything that Canelo brings that Golovkin hasn't really seen yet, whereas Canelo
has not faced
a puncher on that level.
Golovkin just needs to start getting some big fights. I mean, well, he's already like 32. I mean, I know he's fighting Gil, which is Gil's a good opponent. You know, one of going to be maybe the best fighter he's fought yet, but probably won't provide too much resistance, I don't think. And you know, we need to get Golovkin on the. He's like a guy I would be happy to pay to watch his fights. You know, I don't want to pay $60 to watch Canelo and Lara. You know, it's a good fight, but. Man, it's just pay-per-view should really only be reserved for those top level fights. And
yeah,
I'd love to
see
him get to that level of, you know, exposure. And you know, maybe Canelo's a guy coming up that brings that kind of money that can, you know, help put Golovkin on the map. But whether it's Chavez Jr. or Andre Ward or something, you know, he really needs to get in with some kind of either a high profile or a really high level opponent.
Well, let me ask you. We move on to the exquisite undercard. Do you think that based on the performance against Lara, do you think that Canelo learned anything or could apply anything from that fight towards a rematch with Floyd Mayweather? Would he do any better if that happened in 2015?
Well, I mean, I just don't think he could possibly do any worse. But as for this particular fight, I don't know. I think it's kind of like apples and oranges. You know, I don't think Mayweather fights in quite the exact same type of style, and I don't think that was really the problem in the Mayweather fight. I think it was a bunch of different other things, you know. But I think as a whole, I mean, I think every one of these fights, he is accumulating a good experience that, you know, will help him going forward. The problem here is, like, he never really solved Lara. You know, he did enough to get Lara, I guess, to become inactive, you know, enough to basically give away a lot of those rounds and ended up, you know, winning the decision. But was he able to really stalk him down and hurt him or knock him out or not? You know, he didn't do that. So will he do better the next time? I mean, I don't know. Hopefully. I mean, I think he'll probably, you know, if he's shown himself to be the guy he's going to fight the best, there's going to be other tricky boxers. You know, maybe Lara does do something, you know, eventually gets back in a position where he's, you know, in another big fight or he's another, you know, they rematch each other or whatever. But, yeah, Canelo's going to have to fight the style again probably, and you hope that he can take something from the experience and try to figure it out. But I think the bigger question, you know, I don't think it's something where he should be basking in victory. I think they should be asking, you know, could he have cut off the ring better? Could he have been more effective? You know, were there punches he was throwing that maybe he could have targeted different areas and found an opening? That type of thing. You know, because he really allowed Lara to continue doing that with no, you know, real repercussions, aside from losing the score, you know, to the decision.
And you know, I have to say that I hope that Canelo can take something from these fights. And I mean, all personal rooting and all that type of stuff aside, you know, I do kind of like him, but at the same time, I do hope that he's able to take something from these fights as far as, you know, learning things and being able to apply them to bigger things later on, because he's gotten the type of treatment and opportunities that not a lot of fighters get. And so for him to be put in these fights with these stakes and with this type of money, I really hope that it pays off later on. I do. And I hope that he's not just some type of like sideshow that winds up fucking it all up or something like that. I hate to sound harsh, but I hope that that's not the case.
Well, that's what it seems. And, you know, you learn from these. I mean, you look at how impressive Canelo was against Angulo. And I do think a big part of that was, you know, because of the experience with Mayweather. And, you know, obviously, like, against that different type of opponent, it was so much easier to unleash his offense, and it was really just a tour de force of, like, punching from Canelo that night, you know. Now he had another kind of a roadblock with Lara, and, you know, there were times when he didn't look that great himself, and he was kind of mostly ineffective, in, you know, with his offense. But, you know, he got through the fight unscathed, and, you know, it's kind of like, in some ways, you do have to credit some of what Canelo was doing for, you know, whether unconsciously or not, but making Lara choose to fight that way.
Yeah.
So I think you can definitely trace the improvement. And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, from Canelo's point, I don't think it hurts his stock at all. I think he validated himself to a lot of people because he was, he was fighting on even terms against this guy that everyone accused him of avoiding for years, and that a lot of people thought had this real special type of ability that, was one going to be, that Lara could be like a pound for pound level talent and all, in that sense, Canelo, I think, showed that he belongs in the top level of at junior middleweight, but. It's just he got through the fight, and so you have to give Canelo some credit for that. But we always dream of bigger things. We want our guys to go out there and just like a fighter like Canelo, who's supposedly the next superstar. You want him to fight like that. I mean, I look back on De La Hoya, had some kind of average performances, but typically, he did rise to the occasion in a lot of the big fights. I mean, I'm not thinking of but he also had bumps, Trinidad and Whitaker, but he also had great fights where he was, rallying and knocking guys down in the 12th round and knocking people out. And
yeah, I thought that he took that, for example, the Ike Quarte fight pretty much exactly that way. It was even going into the last round, and then he took it in that last round with that rally.
Yeah, and I mean, I think he fought his ass off against
but your overall
like a
point,
fight
yeah.
like De La Hoya.
Your
and
overall
Mosley.
Point is very good too.
Yeah, and maybe Canelo will end up getting in that type of fight and having that type of performance. I mean, it is still early. We're judging it in a vacuum because if you look back and said, eventually, I just want to see Canelo to really get it on the train. We have to see Canelo have a really dominant performance against a top caliber opponent and. Whether it was Lara's style or whatever, that didn't happen.
Yeah. Well, we are judging it in a vacuum as opposed to, Oscar's nose, which has been like a vacuum in the last few years. Io, let's move on to the undercard.
Okay.
Sorry, I had to segue it somehow. Sorry, Oscar. I know you're listening to our show right now because you have nothing else better to do.
He wasn't invited to the Mayweather press conference.
No, he was not. But the main supporting bout, Abner Meyers versus Jonathan Oquendo, a little bit disappointing, I would say, as far as action is concerned. So it's a bit of a bummer, I would have to say.
Yeah, it was.
Apart from, if you're not on social media the way that us fucking losers are, basically what has happened over the last few months, or pretty much ever since getting knocked out by my boy, Johnny Gonzalez. Abner Meyers has kind of had, I don't know if he's like getting bad PR, I don't know if somebody's consulting him badly or some shit, I have no idea, but he seems to kind of make a bunch of social media missteps here and there ever since the fight, calling out Johnny Gonzalez in a way that kind of makes him sound like Johnny's avoiding a fight with him or he's scared of him, and then Johnny's shooting back, shut the fuck up, and it makes Abner look stupid, blah blah blah. And then going into this fight, it seemed as though a lot of people were a little bit soured on Abner Meyers, who in the last few years has been a pretty action type of fighter, won the Showtime Bantamweight tournament, etc., etc.
Yeah, it's
to cap it off with this performance was kind of not helpful.
Yeah, it's too bad. I mean, because Meyers is I like him a lot as a fighter. Really solid guy and always delivered. Fought a really top, high level of competition and was down to fight. And didn't have any flat. Just had good speed and good boxing skills and it was kind of an offensive minded, boxer puncher. And the Gonzalez knockout was shocking. And, now it's there's just now he's a fighter, where there's a lot of questions about him. Is he better off under Virgil Hunter? I mean, did the time out of the ring, affect him at all? I'm going back in my mind, was the Ponce de Leon fight a fluke? And was de Leon just more chinny than we realized? And does Meyers not have that kind of power at featherweight? Cause he's really wasn't a big puncher at bantamweight even, but there's a lot of question marks now. And I mean, I think his stock has definitely gone down a bit, but I I think he's got a lot of talent, and you know, I think the move is, you know, he's got to get himself in shape and try to get ready for a big fight and take that rematch with Gonzalez, and he has to avenge that, I think, because you know he's an 8-1 favorite going into that first fight, and we know Gonzalez had power, but I think Mares probably had the tools or has the tools to beat him, and I think he just needs, you know, he needs to do that to kind of get back to where he was before. But yeah, you're right. I mean, it's definitely is, you know, I think he, you know, he was a tough fighter to really criticize, you know, a year ago because he kind of did everything the right way. And now, and this performance was just boring and listless, and he had a fighter who was clearly beneath his level, but he couldn't get rid of him. It, you know, it's, people have kind of soured in some ways and maybe have, you know, developed some doubts about what, you know, Mares' future will entail.
Well, you know, to me, he looked at least a little bit unsure, you know, for much of the win over Oquendo. And I don't know, you know, maybe it was the combination of kind of shifting his style with the new, you know, new trainer with Virgil Hill. Maybe it was coming back almost
Hunter.
A year after the first loss.
Yeah.
Or I'm sorry, yeah, Virgil Hunter, not Virgil Hill.
Probably should have gotten Virgil Hill to train him.
Maybe he should have gone to Virgil Hill instead. But, you know, coming back almost a year, you know, it was almost a full year after his first loss, which was, again, the rough KO at the hands of my soulmate, Johnny Gonzalez. And, you know, also on top of that, maybe Oquendo was, like, a little bit scrappier than a lot of people thought, you know, and it kind of led to Mares just not really looking that good. And, you know, there's still time to see if he meshes or whatever with Virgil Hunter, but based on what we saw against Oquendo, I'd have to say that Mares needs at least one more fight to kind of settle in before getting back in with, like, a Gonzalez or, you know, Nonito, Donaire, Lomachenko, even maybe even, like, Gradovich. You know, I'm not really sure that the version that we saw against Oquendo beats really any of those guys because he just didn't really look that confident to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he may have fought down the level of competition, too.
Maybe. I mean, I don't know. He
or
didn't
not,
really,
you know, not taking it as seriously back or don't know. I mean, it's just in this era, you know, you wait a year to fight after that. It's obviously a lot different than before where guys would be back in a month and then – you know, really keep sharp, and if they had, you know, if they weren't damaged physically, they could get right back to the same type of level that they were before. But all these factors and getting a new trainer, and yeah, you know, he looked kind of, if I'm remembering right, I feel like he looked kind of chubby at the weigh-in too.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't know.
I'm kind of unsure as to what exactly the plan is. I mean.
It's hard
I don't
to
know.
Glean
I
much
just,
from this stuff, man. Same thing with, like, Broner Molina, like, you know, Carlos Molina. Like, who knows? I mean, we don't really know where they're really at till we see them fighting against the same type caliber that they were fighting before.
Yeah. I have difficulties looking at that performance and then imagining that he's going to successfully use that style against some of the guys that I thought, if a guy like Oquendo, and I mean, like you said, maybe it is possible that he was kind of just working some bugs out. Maybe he fought down to the level of opposition, et cetera, but I just can't really imagine him being successful with that style against those guys. So, you know, it's putting aside all of the jokes about Virgil Hunter and stuff like that, it's just kind of like, I don't really understand what the plan is because he was calling out Johnny Gonzalez after the fight. But I haven't really seen a whole lot of, you know, sincere effort to make that happen once after he had pulled out of the rematch, you know, citing, I think it was like a rib injury or something. But regardless, yeah, I don't know what they're doing.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, guys haven't really looked, when he's hooked up with these guys who are maybe a little more offensive, like Amir Khan and whatever, you know, it's like they haven't really looked great in comeback fights against opponents who were kind of designed to be, you know, comeback fights.
Yeah.
I mean, even that first, when Khan fought Carlos Molina the first time, I mean, I didn't think that was, you know, he ended up stopping him, which is better than what Mares did, but, you know, he still hasn't quite looked great.
Yeah.
you know, when you're on a world level like Khan was or Mara, you know, you're supposed to look great against in these types of fights. You know, whether you got knocked out a year before or not. And when you don't, I mean, it does raise some flags, I think.
And there's also that level of, you know, guys like Khan and Mares have been fighting for so long that it makes me question whether or not a new trainer is going to make that big of a difference, period. You know, I mean, they might encourage them to fight a little bit more this way or a little bit more that way, but at the end of the day, I think that they're probably not going to teach them a whole lot of new stuff. You know what I mean? So
well,
Khan, to me,
looks like he's totally changed his style, and I still question whether it's for the best or not, you know, and I think he may end up becoming more vulnerable when he actually faces a big puncher because he's no longer, you know, he's not showing the same type of, like, offensive firepower. It's more like calculated defense, and I just think that it may end up, he may end up being left like a sitting duck again, but, yeah, I don't know. This was just a tough fight to, you know, get excited about. It was kind of a hard fight to even watch, to be honest, because once, you know, it became obvious that this wasn't going to be, you know, Mares wasn't going to just get right through him, then it was just kind of an exercise, you know. I mean, it was, and the outcome was never really in doubt, so.
And what kind of made it an extra, like, you know, the bummer ship about it, it was kind of, you know, a little extra helping of it being a bummer by the fact that Abner Mares was one of the type of guys where, kind of like Leo Santa Cruz, where you could usually depend on him being in a good fight because he's going to press the action, he's going to dig inside, do some good work to the body, et cetera, et cetera. And so then for him to just kind of do a switcheroo like this style-wise was like, it was like that bugle sound, you know, wah, it was lame.
Yeah, it was definitely not a really good, you know, co-headliner for a pay-per-view. I mean, it just, you know, my whole theory of we like names, not competitive matchups, kind of backfired. I mean, Mares has a name, but, you know, the thing is, when the second, you know, on the co-feature on a pay-per-view, especially one where, you know, Lara and Canelo is really popular, obviously, but he's not a household name. It's not a huge pay-per-view, you know, million-dollar buy guy. I mean, on that undercard, you know, you got to have, I mean, Oquendo really was pretty unqualified to be in the second spot on a pay-per-view undercard.
Well, and the funny thing is, last week when I had said something about the undercard, you were like, oh, you know, it should be pretty good. But then, like, a couple minutes later, you were like, wait, who's he facing again? Jonathan Oquendo. I don't know who that is. And then you were like, oh, yeah, now I know who that is. Oh, no, that's bad. And the funny thing was, and actually the funny thing is, Jonathan Oquendo pushed and actually made it, you know, the little action that there was in that fight, he was the one who created it, pretty much. It was actually Abner that was running away, or, well, not running. I don't want to be all, you know, anti-Lara about the shit, but regardless, you know, yeah, it was Oquendo that was making the fight. And so, anyway.
Yeah. I mean, it's true. I'm not blaming him for what happened, you know. And
you're blaming him, bro. Yeah. No, it was a bummer to really have the I think that we were all kind of like that extra dose of anticipation because not a ton happened on the undercard was just, you know, an extra letdown because the main event wasn't really, you know, ending decisively.
Yeah.
And yeah. Mares Oquendo didn't help.
No.
Is there anything else bad we can say about this fight before we move on? Any other insults?
No, I don't think so.
No,
I think so.
All right. Well, then we'll move on to something positive. How about Francisco Vargas knocking out Juan Manuel Lopez? Well, I mean, mostly positive. Positive for Vargas, anyway.
It was positive for us, too, because it was a pretty good fight, you know, for as short as it was. That was pretty much what you had called last week, too.
Dead on with all my predictions.
Well, when I asked what was going to be, you know, a good fight and what fight was worthwhile on the undercard and blah, 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 we'd said
it was good, Juan Manuel Lopez. Like, you know, it was bittersweet because it, of course, confirmed that I think it was kind of a, you know, him knocking out De Leon in his last fight, maybe just like Mahrez, you know, maybe it's this spoke more to De Leon's kind of deficiencies too, and it maybe made us think that Wanma had more left in the tank. But, you know, he went out on his shield. I mean, the guy's, you know, even though his corner stopped it or whatever, but, like, the guy was just classic Wanma. I mean, he was – but he just didn't seem like he had – I mean – had enough. I mean, it looked like he was landing some good punches too, and maybe Vargas just has a big, good, you know, chin. But it was exciting. I mean, you know, but I just think Wanma, you know, he's pretty much just about done. I mean, he's going to get seriously hurt if he continues boxing because he just honestly has no. He just doesn't. I mean, he just doesn't have the defense. He never really had great defense, but you know, a lot of times. It just seems, I mean, he's getting hurt and hit in every fight. He got dropped by De Leon, even in that fight that he ended up knocking him out. So, in that sense, you know, it was kind of, you know, we just can't delude ourselves into thinking that, I mean, Vargas looked great. I was impressed by what he did. And the second, I forget if it was the second round or third round, but one of those rounds was really, really exciting, and they were both, like, landing bombs on each other. But when it was all said and done, I mean, I think it's just another verification that Wanma is done on any type of, you know, real world-class level. I mean, he should not be fighting anybody that's in the top, like, 15, 20 in that division. And, you know, but that said, Vargas looked good, and, I mean, I'd love to see him move forward and take another step up in competition.
Well, I mean, it was almost certainly the best fight of the card. It didn't have the most sustained action, but it was the best fight of the card. And, I mean, you know, despite losing to Francisco Vargas, and despite the fact that he probably should be thinking about exiting the sport, you know, Juanma Lopez was in another good fight. You know, well, that said, Tomoki Kameda versus, what was his name, Sorsingu, that was a solid fight too, but in putting that on the Showtime preliminary was smart and it was a good introduction. But, you know, Vargas is probably somebody we should be keeping an eye on, is my guess. Although it's also maybe a little deceiving, kind of like you said, because his key wins are against Abner Cotto, Jerry Belmontes, which we said last week, and a clearly faded and chinny Wanma Lopez. But at the very least, he's looking good and winning, and that's important.
And exciting, too. And you know that he will face a fighter who's not going, you know, not as chinny as Wanma and is going to throw some punches back, and he could be, I mean, look at him and Leo Santa Cruz could be a war sometime, you know, and that's another good thing about him. I mean, he has an exciting style and he's willing to trade punches.
Yeah, definitely. And he seems pretty marketable too. I mean, at the very least, it seemed like a bunch of people after the fight were like, hey, you know, Francisco Vargas, who the hell is this? Or, you know, even going into the fight, he had been featured a few times on, I'm drawing a blank as far as what show it was or, you know, what network it was. But regardless, you know, he had been featured a few times before. And so it's not like he was totally unknown going in or anything like that. But he seems like he's a pretty easy sell, you know, especially after knocking out a dude who was obviously faded but pretty beloved. Too, overall,
yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
Kind of a jackass after the whole calling out the ref thing, but regardless, in the ring, pretty beloved.
No,
he's a figure in Puerto Rico. Yeah, in Puerto Rico too. He's a celebrity in Puerto Rico. So, if you're a celebrity in Puerto Rico, then man, you made it.
That's yeah, and Vargas seems sturdy too. I mean, we saw him take some what appeared to be big punches. It's just hard to know, like, was there that much steam on Wanma's punches, or you know, does he have he. Was a pretty big puncher in his day and, you know, knocked out De Leon in his last fight, and Vargas took a couple shots and walked right through him.
Yeah.
But I mean, I expect that he's going to end up being more of a brawler type of guy than a real finesse boxer, just based on what we've seen. And you know, something like that could be, I mean, that seems like a guy, like I said, perfect guy for Santa Cruz. I mean, who would you, if Mort of Mara's fate, fought Vargas, like who would you take right now? Vargas is
much
bigger. That's another thing to think about, you know. And with Mahrez, I feel like running up to 126 so quickly, and at the time it looked like he was kind of trying to follow Nonito Donaire, but Donaire has a much bigger frame. I don't know if it's the right division for him.
Well, and on top of that, I mean, I kind of had to wonder too, because Wanma Lopez, he's he wasn't really huge as a featherweight as is. I mean, you know, he was effective at 122
pounds.
Oh,
yeah, they were fighting at 130,
featherweight,
right?
And they were at 130. And so I was kind of just like, well, I don't really know how much of that is the weight, too. And so that's what kind of, in a bad way, opens the door for Juan Manuel Lopez to be like, oh, well, if I move back down to weight, I'll be okay, you know? And so I don't know how much of it
weight.
Was
I'm going
weight.
To lightweight.
Oh, yeah, that would be fucking splendid. Yeah, he can actually fight Gamboa, and that fight would still actually kind of make a little bit of sense. Oh, Jesus, that's horrible. I hope nobody heard that and got that idea. But
I'd watch it, but I think Gamboa probably,
yeah, probably would watch
pretty
that
quickly.
Too.
Yeah, Juanma just seems like he just doesn't have a hole. I mean, once Salido really cracked that, it just never was the same.
Yeah. Man. Well, you know, as far as the whole Maris thing and, like, you know, with Vargas, it's kind of like I'm not entirely sure. Well, it's also
I spaced out thinking that Vargas was fighting at 126. That actually wouldn't make any sense because the last thing Maris needs to do is go fight a bigger guy, you know. I mean, Johnny Gonzalez, I think, was probably too big and too big of a puncher for him.
Well, and I think that he's probably going to be looking at guys like, what's it called? Salido, Miura, Barthelemy, guys like that. I don't even know if Fortuna's on the table for him because of I don't even understand all of this promotional shit yet. I'm still kind of trying to wrap my head around some of it, so I don't know who can fight who, and fuck, it's really confusing even to me. But regardless, you know, there are some good fights for him to be made. And like you said, it seems like he's probably going to be a little bit more entertaining, a little bit more brawler than, you know, stylist, hashtag purist boxer. So, yeah, I think that he probably is going to be a fun guy to look out for.
Yeah, I mean, definitely, man. I mean, what can you say? You know, it was really exciting and good performance, but it just, you know, we'd like to see fights. I mean, that's the thing about this card is I felt like all of the fights, and I got to admit, I was slightly tuning in and out of the Herrera-Johan Perez fight. So I just have to get that on the table right now. And that actually seemed like a pretty good fight on paper, and I should maybe go watch it. But, you know, aside from the main event, the fights were kind of, they kind of had a mismatch element to them, you know, and then with the main event being totally inconclusive, it was good that, you know, it just made the whole thing, like, a bit disappointing. Whereas even though I felt like, you know, the Cotto Martinez was kind of a farce and that Sergio was so injured, you know, having that very, very, you know, clearly demonstrated for us, there was some satisfaction in it, at least, you know, there's no questions really about, I mean, it was just Cotto, like, emphatically, you know, showed that he's on that level, you know, like, he's more viable than Martinez is, and Martinez is done. And it was just a very neat story. You know, this one, the main event, had all these questions. Here you have, you know, a guy like Juanma who, you know, if Martinez is shot, Juanma is basically dead. Because, I mean, I'm not interested in seeing him, like, get knocked out anymore. I mean, it's happened, like, four or five times now. So, I mean,
yeah,
I want to be excited for Vargas, but it'd be awesome to see him fighting, like, another young guy or somebody undefeated, you know, something like that. And then,
I want to say that that Lopez is, I think he's, like, 5-5 in his last 10. It's either he's 5-5 in his last 10 or 4-4 in his last 8. I can't remember, and I don't have it in front of me. But, I mean,
brutal knockouts.
And on top of that, you know, like, dude, I'm going to kind of harp on myself a little bit because I'm always preaching about taking it back to old school, back when days and blah, 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 you know. But at the end of the day, we're not back in that time. And having a 50-50 record in your last 8 fights and all 4 of the losses being, like, fucking just horrific knockouts where you're concussed, like, to shit, it's not going to be good for anybody, whether it was in the old school or now. And he's just, he's worn. He's even in some of his wins, he's taken some punishment. Like, what was it, the Rodgers-Mategua fight where he barely survived the last few rounds? So in any event.
Before,
you know,
he even ended up getting totally, you know.
If it's, if it's up to me, I ask the guy to retire, you know, gracefully, but he probably won't. He'll probably move down or some shit like that. But I heard you say that you didn't, that you kind of tuned out of the Herrera Perez fight. Dude, are you turning in your purist card?
That is true. And I actually was trying to, like, defend that fight, and I was kind of interested in it. But I just had to I was trying to rush through the card and get ahead to the Canelo Lara because I watched it on replay, and it just wasn't – I just basically started just doing the fast-forward every 5 minutes and kind of check in to see if anything happened.
And
so, I mean, you tell me. I mean, Herrera got – it was a majority decision.
Yes. Well, I was going to say really quick before I talked about that for a minute, pretty much alone because you're
well,
a loser,
I mean, I like to comment on the results, but man, it just was tough to watch that at the end of the night after, you know, I was at a wedding and then I tried to watch
for
it
sure.
That night and it was just like
I was just going to say that somebody had tweeted, his name is Mickey Landsman. He'd said, I'd like to see Vargas take on Omar Figueroa at 135 eventually. He has a great fight written all over it. And real quick, I'd like to say that, yeah, if he does make his way up to 135 and the size all makes sense and Figueroa is still there, yeah, style-wise, I think that would probably make for a pretty fun fight.
Yeah, that's a good call.
But yes, I mean, speaking of fun fights, I actually thought that Herrera Perez was pretty fun overall.
Oh, really? Okay. Maybe I just missed it.
It wasn't all, like, action-packed, but I thought that it was, you know, pretty much how most Herrera fights seem to go. A lot of, like, nip-and-tuck action, a lot of, you know, back-and-forth type of action with Herrera, you know, he has, like, a really subtle defense a lot of the time, and he does kind of get hit sometimes, too. So it was, I thought it was actually a pretty good fight, personally. I don't know.
Did you think Herrera clearly won, or I mean, was it close?
I thought that it was close, but that he clearly won. I thought that he edged it. I mean, I know that doesn't really sound like it makes a lot of sense, but I do think that a fight can be scored closely, but clearly.
Okay.
And that's kind of how I thought it went, because I thought that Herrera was just, like in a lot of his fights, he was forcing the action inside. On the outside, he just kind of has a really weird timing on the outside, and he can occasionally kind of like, you know, wing shots and land them that way. But inside, he works really well, and he has a really kind of just awkwardly effective style inside. And I thought that a lot of the punches that he were landing were more effective, and they were like stinging a little bit more than Perez's punch. But actually, I thought Perez held his own quite well, too. So it was close, but I thought that Herrera deserved to win, too.
Shit, all right, now I got to watch it. Why did I choose to watch Mahrez Oquendo over fucking the Herrera-Perez fight?
I don't know. Fuck. I don't know. I don't have an answer for you. I mean, I don't know. I
thought it
would
be a quick
bad
knockout, so I was just like, God damn it.
Well, I mean, he's the type of guy where, like I was saying, he kind of stands in the pocket, makes things interesting, despite probably having the skill to fight, you know, maybe a slightly different way. But that's not to say that Perez wasn't at least moderately successful. You know, he met him in the pocket. He landed well in spots, but I thought that Herrera rightfully won.
Okay, so you're good with Perez being a credible opponent for guys at 140.
Until we're told something else. I mean, Herrera's not the type of guy that's going to like destroy a younger prospect coming up. You know what I mean? Like he might outbox him or something like that, but he's not going to like, you know, end some dude's undefeated streak or some shit like that and just totally send him back to the minors. But you know, it was for a belt though.
Right. And it's kind of a stupid-ass consolation considering Herrera probably should have beaten Danny Garcia, who's considered by most the champion in junior welterweight. But, yeah, it was for some type of whatever belt. But I thought that it was good enough that they both probably earned another, you know, another TV slot.
Okay, well, yeah, Herrera obviously, I think, deserves to be in that mix at 140 and has only lost to the elite, really elite guys there.
Well, I think that...
And those were, you know, that one Dan Garcia fight was obviously was debatable.
Yeah. Yeah, there's no question. And a lot of people had him winning outright. I personally was one of them. I thought that he could have just won that fight.
Herrera Matisse might be a good one. I don't know why they're giving Garcia and Matisse, or the rumors, you know, these pretty bad opponents.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of feel like at this stage, whether he has a belt or not, it's kind of like Carlos Molina, you know, like the 154-pounder Carlos Molina, not the other Carlos Molina. But I kind of feel like he has a style that's going to be difficult for most guys to deal with. He doesn't bring a whole lot of fans. He doesn't bring a whole lot of money. And
he is very effective. He's a guy that could kind of like, if he gets just a little bit of luck on the scorecards, he could win.
He can be a lot of different type of guys. And I mean,
speaking of fighting up or down to opposition, he's the type of guy that does exactly that. You know, when he fought Mike Alvarado, I thought, you know, came into that fight really good shape, had a good game plan, and kind of just outworked him, hit harder.
Yep.
But Herrera hung with him pretty well. You know, he hung with Danny Garcia, who was probably, you know, depending on who you ask, the junior welterweight champion. So in any event, yeah, I think that he's proven that he can move forward and probably be a contender, a legitimate contender in that division. So should we be beating the drum for a Danny Garcia rematch or something like that, James Foley?
I don't know, man. You know, I think I kind of scored that fight closely for Garcia. If you're going to, you know, offer me the rematch or something like Garcia and Rod Salka, then I'm all in favor of it. But I also think that there's other guys who I'd rather see Garcia fight. So it's tough, you know.
It's tough.
Lightning Rod Salka.
Yeah, Garcia, yeah. I know. I think a Matisse-Herrera fight makes a lot of sense. And I feel like that would have, you know, that would be, the winner of that would be clearly deserving of fighting Danny Garcia. If, you know, you kind of consider Garcia as the champion and that's where, you know, what the ultimate goal would be.
Well, I'm just going to go ahead and say that Rod Salka missed out on
opportunity not having his nickname be Throbbing. Throbbing Rod Salka.
Like your boy on, what's that, who's that dude?
Who's Throbbing Rick Glazer?
I can't remember.
Oh.
Man, this sucks. My connection's really fucked up. Can you hear me okay? Because I'm like, you're like...
Yeah, I hear you fine.
All right.
Yeah, no,
really
I hear
annoying.
You fine.
All okay,
because right,
well, I keep like losing you halfway.
Well, let's stop talking about fights that you didn't watch and start talking about fights that you're not going to watch.
Okay.
Zhao Ximing.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Zhao Ximing versus Luis De La Rosa. That's what's coming up this coming weekend on HBO. Or actually, I think it's HBO 2. It's on I'm actually kind of confused.
Oh, nice.
I'm actually kind of confused about what they're going to be showing it on, because on the very schedule of Bad Left Hook, which I refer to often because Scott covers fucking everything.
Oh, dude, don't
on
give
the face
the
of the planet.
Don't give that guy the fucking page views.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Dude, he covers everything. I wish I could. I really do wish I could. But I'm actually a little bit confused because on that schedule and on a different schedule, I don't know which fights they're showing on what, but it says it's going to be on HBO 2, Unimas. It's going to be on, I think one of them was not Fox Sports, but some other, you know, smaller channel. And so I don't even know what fight's going to be on what. I'm guessing that Zhao Ximing is going to be on HBO 2.
Yeah,
I don't even know what the fuck, dude. It's weird. But anyway, headlining that card is Zhao Ximing. When are we going to see this dude, like, fight actual someone, you know? You know what I mean? Somebody.
Somebody. Right, and that's what – it doesn't make any sense. Like, you know, if I'm – it's nice that they're trying to put fights on HBO 2 and whatever and increase the boxing coverage, but I'd much rather, you know, for that $10 a month of my boxing subscription, I'd rather watch a guy like Rigondeaux right now than watch Zhao Ximing fighting somebody who's clearly a huge underdog and not, you know, not a real world-class opponent. I mean, Rigondeaux's ranked like, you know, one best pound-for-pound guy or whatever, lineal champion at 122. I mean, like, if you're going to go there or, you know, have the production there, like, show that guy. He's by far the best fighter on the card. You know, maybe his style's not that exciting, but, like, what is it, Zhu Shiming? Is this going to be, like, Corrales Castillo or something?
Well, I mean, all right. So I'm not super familiar with his opponent, or at least, I mean, I've read on him and, like, you know, I've seen, like, during little, you know, scrolling through fight news and stuff like that, I'll see, like, when he fights, and I'll, like, read the results, blah, blah, blah. But Luis De La Rosa, he fought at minimum weight, which is also known as the fucking lightest a man can get while still being even remotely effective in physical combat weight. And he's been stopped twice in his last four fights, both at lower weights, and the fight's going to be at flyweight. So he hasn't fought in like 8 months. In other words, this is a mismatch on paper. Even given Shaming's relative like inexperience and, you know, De La Rosa has like 30 fights under his belt or something, I'm still guessing that – I have to guess the Top Rank must be really hoping for like a bankable audience in China, because there's no other reason – that Shiming De La Rosa would be headlining this card.
Yeah, but why is it on HBO? That's like the main thing. Like, why is HBO like, why are they so intent on like ramming? You know, they turn their backs on the Klitschko's, which is fine, fair enough. But like, why are they so intent on ramming Zhu Shiming down our throats?
I don't get it.
And then banishing Rigondeaux from the network is just like, you know, okay. I mean, not that good stylistically, but that doesn't stop them from showing like tons of other fighters with the same issues. And I appreciate what Rigondeaux does
like
a lot
Zhu
more.
Shiming. Like Zhu Shiming, he's not even that like exciting. He's like this gangly ass weird dude to watch. And on top of that, he's not like flattening guys or anything. So what the fuck?
Right. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But I mean, I think. I don't know what the deal is with HBO. I mean, all their good fights are on pay-per-view, except for, like, you know, I mean, they have Golovkin and Kovalev or, you know, Provodnikov, but with the exception,
man,
we're just
making new fans left and right.
No, I don't know. I mean, you know, it just doesn't make like, I am curious. I will watch the Rigondeaux fight, probably. I will seek that out and record it and watch Rigondeaux, because he's one of the best guys in the world right now at what he's doing. Shiming is, you know, he's like, just at this point, kind of a sideshow. I mean, if he does eventually, you know, challenge for a world title, it's likely going to be against the, you know, least threatening guy in that division, or they'll just create a vacancy and make it against some, you know, somebody that he can beat. But he just doesn't seem like he's going to be competitive. He's older. He doesn't seem like, I mean, he's a great amateur, but doesn't seem like he's really going to be anything special as a pro.
And it doesn't even, to me, it doesn't seem like, you know, I could be wrong here, and maybe I'm just not reading from the correct sources or something like that, but I haven't even seen a whole lot of, like, propping him up like he's going to be the next big thing. It seems to me like they're well aware of you know, his drawbacks or his, you know, inexperience or his ceiling, as it were. It seems to me like they're aware that they're not really going to be matching him all that tough all that time, you know, all that soon, because he's not that good as a pro. So,
well, they're using him to make inroads in China, which is potentially a huge market. But okay, do that. But I don't. Why is it on HBO too?
I don't know.
If they're going to devote that space to showing a fight, and one of the best fighters in the world is fighting on the same card, why are you not airing that? I mean, it really is kind of a. You know, I mean, I get all the anti-Rigondeaux backlash. I'm not saying I want him to be like, you know, I want to pay $70 to watch him fight. Although I can always claim when people are like, have you never paid to watch Rigondeaux fight? Yes, I did, because he was on the undercard of the Martina Chavez fight. But, you know, it's just if you're going there and you're showing the broadcast, I mean, that's what doesn't make any sense to me. It's like just Rigondeaux is going to be on Unimas.
Yeah. It makes no sense. Well, and I mean, I guess closing the fucking book on Zhu Shiming here. The whole point is that at flyweight, the division's good. The division's fucking hot right now, or at least it has a really huge potential to be really hot. It's difficult to really.
If you get the Roman Gonzalez Estrada rematch, and you get a couple other real action fighters down there,
It seems like it's difficult to get the money together. It's difficult to really gather the resources to match all of these guys together. But there's some potential fucking explosions there. Regardless, I mean, the whole point is that we really just cannot figure Zhu Xueming into Akira Yagashi, Juan Estrada, Brian Valoria, even Gonzalez, Segura, all these guys. He's just not on that level. So putting him on, Nate, whatever. Anyway, Guillermo Rigondo, let's start talking about that guy because he's an actual world-class fucking fighter. He's going to be fighting a guy who goes by Saud Kokiyajim, who also used to be Saud, I think it's, hold on, I'm going to try it, Luk Nyang Yang Toy, I believe it was pronounced. He's a dude that, speaking of Daniel Ponce de Leon, that got flattened by Ponce de Leon a handful of years ago. And I mean, like, when I say flattened, I mean, like, totally fucking destroyed. Like, the first fight was, like, a respectable decision. And then, like, in the rematch, he got absolutely, like, almost killed. It was horrible. Anyway, that was, like, 7 years ago, and that's who Guillermo Rigondo is going to be fighting. And it's not so much that I say that as a knock against Rigondo. It more goes to, like, exactly what we were talking about, which is why? Why are they doing this to this dude? I don't understand. Like, a year ago, you know, it was kind of like, all right, just give them an opportunity. They might do right by Guillermo Rigondo. I know that they say that they're horrified by him and they don't give a shit about him, but give him a chance. And now, like, we gave him a chance, and clearly Top Rank does not give a fuck. What the hell?
Yeah, the thing is, if, it's funny because, you know, Lara somehow gotten that decision in a much less impressive performance than what Rigondo had against Donaire. Lara for sure would have gotten another big fight because he's got Heyman, he's got the Watsons, he's part of that crew. He's gonna, you know, they wouldn't bury him, they wouldn't do this to him. And meanwhile, you know, and Canelo's still largely unproven. You know, meanwhile Rigondo does what he did against the guy who's legitimate pound for pound talent, you know, one of the best fighters in the whole sport and explosive, powerful, everything. And Rigondo just completely almost shuts him out, except for getting, you know, kind of a flash knockdown in the one round, which he came back and finished strong. I mean, it was just a brilliant performance. And, you know, the Igbeko fight was okay on paper. I mean, Igbeko was a good fighter from, you know, division beneath, super bantamweight. But it just turned out to be a bad fight. And I still blame a lot of that on Igbeko, you know.
More
than Rigondo. But
that was horrific.
Yeah, and now he's just been banished to, you know, fighting in Asia and not even getting U.S. He's on Unimas, which is not premium U.S. coverage. It's, I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of good fights. Boxing fans would be interested in seeing him fight, you know, some of the best fighters. After this, he's leaving Top Rank, so who knows? Maybe he will hook up with Golden Boy and those guys and, you know, eventually get him in there. I mean, somebody like Santa Cruz, probably not going to be skilled enough to hang with Rigondo if Rigondo can stay in his prime, because, you know, he is getting a little older, but like a guy like with that style would, I think, bring out a really explosive fight. Somebody's going to press him and throw, you know, that many punches around. Rigondo will have to open up more and you could see another kind of masterpiece of boxing. But it's just, you know, what Rigondo did against Donaire, it's not that dissimilar to what Floyd Mayweather has done many, many times and is hailed as a genius and, you know, all that stuff. And Rigondo does it to a world-class guy and disappears off the face of the earth.
I hate to say it because we're pretty much constantly, you know, if not talking shit, pretty much calling his dealings into question. But seriously, if Guillermo Rigondo wants fights, sign with Al Heyman. He's got Leo Santa Cruz. And past that, he would probably need to either move up and wait or, you know, try to play some other type of fucking ball. But regardless, if that's the fight that he's aiming for, that's what he needs to do.
Well, and there's no reason why not. I mean, there's no reason for him to be loyal to Top Rank. I mean, they've really, I think, not treated him great since the Donaire fight. And there's, you know, other fights that they could have made, and I think they steered those guys away from him, too. I mean, you look at the group that Top Rank has at featherweight, as if Rigondeaux wouldn't be down to just go up 4 pounds and fight all those guys. But he wasn't even mentioned, you know, when they talked about the Gradovich and Nicholas Walter coming up and Donaire and all, you know. You throw Rigondeaux in that mix, he's the favorite. I mean, they were talking about having a tournament. I mean, he beat Donaire already, you know, so it's like he does, you know, I think he does, whereas someone like Lara, I feel like, you know, the way he fought, it really, you know, it's hard to have that much sympathy for him. But, I mean, I think Rigondeaux, you know, you don't want, a guy can't change his style just to please everybody. But Rigondeaux does, like, everything right. And I think he does clearly enough to, you know, when he got the big fight, he put on a great performance and he really, you know, vaulted himself up there in the discussion as one of the best boxers in the world. And for him to be shut out of it, I mean, I know we all want bloodbaths and action and all that stuff, but he deserves to be, you know, front and center at that scene from 122 to 126. And the fact that he's not is, you know, another testament to, like, when the business kind of becomes greater than the sport. So, yeah, hopefully he does sign with Heyman.
Oh, man. I just, you know, even if you don't like Rigondeaux, which I get, because just maybe some people just aren't interested in that type of style. And I understand that because it's not the most exciting style. Although it's not totally devoid of entertainment value, I don't think. Regardless, I do understand if people don't like it. That said, even just having a vague appreciation of the skill basically what it takes to do what he did to Nonito Donaire, the way that he pretty much just totally shit-kicked him. Well, no, that's not true. He trashed him in terms of boxing. He didn't, like, beat the crap out of him or anything, but regardless.
But he landed a lot of really clean punches.
Yeah, the top few pound for pound, and just totally outdid him. Like, it was basically a sparring session aside from the knockdown. And that was pretty much a fleeting moment. That didn't last very long. And
former
Nonito didn't do anything.
Coming off the Fighter of the Year campaign, too. And
so,
now
I mean,
we all were like, oh, Donaire was always limited, you know, and now he's looked crappy in his last couple fights, so it devalidates.
Was basically handed a belt in his last fight against Betyeka, too, and then now look at the guy that beat him, Rigondeaux, fighting on Unimas. It's sad, dude. It's just a sad state of affairs when we have to, you know, speak up for the guy because the people that are supposed to be looking out for him aren't. That's fucking bullshit. Anyway, also on the undercard, I don't even really, you know, feel it needs to be talked about for a really long time, but Ryan Valoria and Rex So. Oh, and Gilberto Sanchez are all fighting on the undercard. And like I said, I don't even know what's going to be televised and what's not and where and when. I have tape delay, no clue. No clue at all.
Well, I don't think most of it is necessarily worth getting up that early to try to watch it live anyway.
I mean, I'm kind of wondering if, I remember last year when we talked to Lupe Contreras, the man with the...
Nice name drop.
Yep, with the awesome voice too. Well, he had talked about when he was in Macau, and he had put some emphasis on Rex, I think it's pronounced Sue, but it's spelled so in any event. He had put some emphasis on that kid and said that the Chinese boxing fans seem to be a little bit more excited about him than they are Ximing. But for whatever reason, Top Rank has really latched on to Ximing as like their key in the, you know, to get into the door or whatever. But in any event, it's interesting to see how they're stacking it up, and it seems as though maybe they might be aiming Ximing towards Brian Valoria. I don't know, maybe because Valoria is, you know, kind of on the older side for a guy that small and can kind of turn in a good performance every so often, but is pretty spotty as far as his performances. So I don't know if that's even in the plan, but it kind of seems that way, putting Brian Valoria on the card. Anyway. Yeah, HBO. So, since we still have some time left, though, well, go ahead. Did you have some?
Oh, I was just going to go on.
Stuff?
I was just going to basically just say that, like, as much as like you know, Espinoza at times can be somewhat, like, obnoxious on Twitter. He's front and center, you know. He's, like, put himself out there, and he, the network, it's because the network's, like, you know, has done a lot of good things under his regime, you know, and it doesn't help that he has, like, one of the biggest promoters, you know, feeding him a lot of these fights. But, and look, there's some shit coming up. I mean, the Garcia card is a total travesty, definitely. But, you know, it's funny because when asked about it, he didn't try to act like it was a great fight. He basically just was like, you know, Garcia and Peterson didn't want to fight each other. And, like, sometimes you have to take these bad fights in order to, like, you know, I mean, he just, I mean, kind of told it like it is. And the thing with, like, HBO, you don't understand, like, half the decisions they're making, you don't even understand it. And it's just, they feel like, whoever's, I mean, Ross Greenberg, or not Ross Greenberg, sorry, Ken Hirschman, is the some of the, you know, you just don't really understand what the thought process is, because you feel like somebody in that position of power and that, you know, wielding with all of HBO's might behind you, could just be doing a lot better than what they're doing, you know. And even, like, it's not like this Rigondeaux thing is out of left field. I mean, Max Kellerman was on their air going on this, you know, impassioned defense of Rigondeaux and saying he was his number three pound for pound and all, you know, he was such a great fighter and all that. So, like, you know, they've put that on their air, and then they make no effort to try to, you know, get him back on there. And it's like they're just taking whatever Top Rank is, you know, telling them that they have to do. And, you know, if we're going to see shows on HBO too, I mean, you look at how bad some of these openers have been on some of the, you know, main HBO cards. It's just, yeah. Situation's just, like, you know, getting pretty bad as far as... Well, you know, it's not the standard that they've had historically.
Well,
and they can't seem to get their big fights made between their own fighter. You know, guys like Andre Ward or Kovalev, or, you know, Ward could fight, go up and fight Kovalev. It would be huge. He could, you know, Golovkin could go up and fight Ward. Things like that, where you're dealing with fighters who aren't really that popular and they're not bound by, like, needing to be in, you know, huge fights. But fights that could happen that could really propel somebody to that level. And HBO doesn't seem like they're even pushing these things to happen.
We've talked about, or, you know, we've kind of talked shit about Showtime having these kind of, like, accidental good fights. HBO can't even really get accidental good fights. You know, they're in comparison anyway. It's not like either network has been, like, useless or anything like that, and it kind of gets, you know, out of hand with the hyperbole and everything. But still, when we're comparing the two, at the very least, Showtime is having better results, even if they don't mean to. So, yeah, we've obviously been leaning on, like, Showtime's way as far as who we're going to support or who we think is doing a better job. But
just
one of the highlights of that.
Yeah, and their format has become better, too. I mean, HBO, the one thing you could almost always bank on was, like, HBO had superior production quality. But, you know, now, like, they've got Brian Kenny manning the anchor desk. They've got, like, you know, everyone's at the desk. Everyone goes ringside. There's, like, a 10- or 15-minute after-fight discussion. And it's just much more, like, it harkens back to, like, you remember the, like, big pay-per-views in the mid-2000s. You always have, like Bob Costas or James Brown or somebody working the HBO desk, and they'd have all these guests on, and then they'd throw it down to ringside. And it's like all of that has disappeared too. And now, you know, if the last few HBO pay-per-views have been these very, like, bare-bones productions, and meanwhile Showtime's, like, really putting it on and giving it a feel like a real big fight.
And on top of that, dude, we've in the last couple of years, I think that at least me, I mean, I know that I'm a, like, cynical, pessimistic motherfucker and everything, but when they started doing the kind of multi-fight cards, you know, where they were putting on, instead of two fights, three fights, four fights, even in some cases, like, five fights. And
the quad headers.
Even in some cases on top of that, they do a lead-in on Showtime Extreme before the four fights and, you know, basically just piling on more and more and more, which we've said isn't always good. But
hey,
even
dude,
so, but
don't
even
forget.
So with Go ahead.
I was going to say, it started, remember, don't forget where it started. What was it called? Forewarned or something? And it was that Antonio Tarver, Latif Coyote.
Yeah.
And it was a terrible card. What was on the undercard? Drought against Delvin Rodriguez, and that turned out to be an awful fight.
It was not a good card, but at the very least, you know, that kind of seemed like it was going to be a novelty that wasn't going to last. But not only has it not been a novelty and they've kept doing it, on top of that, they've really forced HBO to start doing things like that too. You know, they forced HBO to start using their extra fucking 19 channels because Showtime was using, instead of just Showtime, Showtime Extreme and shit like that.
Yep.
And there have been a couple instances where Showtime, where HBO's done that too. And so on top of the whole entertainment value, they've also been pushing the envelope.
Giving you more bang for your buck. I mean, and there's no denying it. And it's like they figured it out the first time. Everyone was like, oh, fucking quadruple header, but all the fights suck. You know, I think they all went the distance too, which was just painful. But, yeah, they've come back and been like, wait, we can do the same thing, but put all of our action fighters on it. And, yeah, you've got some awesome results. And some, there's some great fights that were on undercards of these shows, like Matisse Molina and Figueroa Arakawa a couple years ago. And, of course, we've said that they've had a lot of luck in terms of some of their fights on paper turned out to be a lot more competitive. But, you know, they're just, when they're being proactive and they're really, you know, like making their own destiny. And it just looks like HBO is just taking whatever slop that they're offered. Didn't they turn down like Fonfara against Adonis Stevenson? Or they turned down some fight where the guy was fighting a totally acceptable opponent. And now we're getting like Kovalev against Blake Caparello, and you got some other garbage. And I know Showtime, yeah, they're gonna have some bad shows too, but as a rule, they've just been more consistent, and there's been better stuff on the undercards.
Should they, HBO, even back in the day, a couple of years ago, turned down Israel Vasquez versus Rafael Marquez 3. I mean, fuck.
Yeah.
I was like, they don't have interest in that. So basically, if you take the last, like, 3 or 4 minutes of what we've been saying, run it through a filter, it sounds like this. Right on Showtime. That's pretty much exactly what we did. But it is true. They've been doing a good job, and it has to be recognized, even if it's, you know, on the surface, some of the people who are running the company or kind of behind some of the shit seem like evil villains that we don't want to root for. In some ways, they've been doing a good job, and that has to be recognized.
Well, and it's a company that's obviously, like, you know, they just seem to be committed to boxing. And HBO, you got Lampley crying over there and whatever, and then I don't see it. No, what's going on with the executives at HBO? You know, you don't see that same level of like commitment and innovation. And so I think what needs to happen first is Ken Hirschman needs to get a Twitter account.
Yeah. Well, it actually, you know, even though you're being, you know, quasi facetious, it is true, though. This is exactly where a lot of this discussion takes place. On social media, this is where you create new fans. This is where you help drive, you know, the sport as far as the fans it already has. And, I mean, I get that if you're, like, 63 years old, you just never really got into that whole internet thing. And this is just not what you do. I get it. But in order to really, you know, pick at the market, that's what you have to do. You have to get on the social media and interact with fans. And, you know, I think that Espinoza is kind of a douchebag about it sometimes, but he does interact. And not all the time, too. Sometimes he's honest, and sometimes he's just, you know, painfully honest. But regardless, he is interacting.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, it's, you know, it's funny sometimes. And, you know, his little feud with Dan Rafael was pretty...
Oh, man. Well, the talk of the last day and a half, since we have some time left, if you don't mind or if you have nowhere to go, Floyd Mayweather versus Marcos Maidana rematch. That's been the talk. So are you okay with this fight? Because it seems to be kind of a mixed reaction.
Yeah, I mean, I'm okay with it. I mean, it's not my number one fight that I would have for, you know, you have Manny Pacquiao's fighting Chris Algieri and fucking whatever, but I think in the context of what's going, you know, the boxing business, after a long conversation I had with Glazer, I think it's a pretty good, I think it's a pretty reasonable fight, you know, and I'm happy to see Maidana get another payday and a little bit more exposure. And that, like I said, I mean, I think that I'm going a little bit against the conventional wisdom, but I think that Maidana will be pretty effective again in different parts of the fight, and it could be, you know, it could be pretty exciting just like the first one. So I'm good with it. You know, I don't think it's a total farce. I would have been more interested, I guess, in seeing Mayweather take on like Sean Porter or Keith Thurman, who aren't quite as proven as Maidana, I guess, just since Maidana had, you know, had such a good showing against Floyd and beat Broner pretty easily. But I just would have liked to have seen a little bit of a difference, because I still think Maidana's speed is kind of an issue, and I think that when he, you know, I think Floyd was able to take advantage of that later on in the fight when Maidana seemed to kind of slow down a little bit. And I'd love to see him in with a fast, aggressive guy like Porter. And also, by the way, did you see the Porter interview piece on show when he was interviewing? He did an interview with Brian Kenny. I'm just, like, really impressed with the guy, man. I think he's, you know, I think he could end up becoming a real, you know, not just a legit guy, but somebody who has that kind of star appeal if he can end up, you know, winning those fights and being good enough. But yeah, on this, but, you know, in, on its own, I mean, I think it's, I think it's, there's a lot to look forward to with it. You know, I'm interested to see if Maidana can, you know, back up my words and be effective again and be really aggressive. And I think it's a good style for Floyd to look good against, with a guy who throws a lot of punches, you know, because a lot of the criticisms of Floyd's fights being boring, the biggest problem was that his opponent just completely bottled up and let him, you know, dictate the fight. And Maidana never did that. And I mean, even when I thought he had lost and, you know, was getting, Floyd was getting the better of him in the last half, I was still really impressed with that Maidana never seemed to kind of mentally give up the way that so many other Floyd opponents have. And he was fighting hard.
Out of it.
No, and he fought hard through the 12th round, you know, and arguably won that round. So I think he deserves it, and it's like, it's just impossible to root against Maidana. I mean, the guy's, like, incredibly likable. You know, if let's say he'd fought Broner, and Broner had a good fight with him or whatever, and then Broner got a rematch, I mean, people would be like, no, I don't want to see more of him. But, you know, Maidana, you have to love the guy. So it's, you know, if it means he's getting another big payday and he's got another chance to try to improve on his first performance, I'm down with that. It's good to see that he's fighting more frequently too, you know, that Floyd's taking a fight 4 months after the first fight.
If we're living in, like, in this idealistic world where we can make whatever matches we want and you can totally set aside all the little feuds and the fucking blood feuds and all this type of shit between promoters, you know, if we live in that world, yeah, is this, like, the best fight to make? And no, it's probably not even the best fight to make in any world. But when you put all these things together and you do recognize the limitations that we have as far as the potential opponents for Floyd Mayweather and Manny Pacquiao, too, since he's obviously going to be brought up sooner or later in the discussion, you know, you do kind of have to understand that, I mean, not you, but in general, we have to understand that, you know, there's just a limited number of opponents to work with. And so, especially when you add in the fact that the fight's going to be in September, which is in less than 2 months now, it has to be a quick promotion rather than this whole, you know, when they talk about, oh, that fight needs like 5-6 months to, you know, we're talking about less than 2 months now. So they basically needed a pre-sold, you know, like cookie cutter promotion. That's what they needed. They needed a storyline that already existed. And this was the only fight they could do. I think that that's why people were talking about this a month ago, saying, yeah, they're going to do a rematch. They hadn't really confirmed it. Nobody had said anything. So, you know, I think that it's a natural. I didn't think the first fight was so close that we, you know, really need to see it or anything. But like you said, I think Marcos Maidana is going to come in hungry again. I think that he's going to come in again looking for blood. He's going to come in pretty much the exact same way. He's probably going to trouble Floyd Mayweather again, and a lot of it's going to, like we said earlier in the show, a lot of it's going to depend on whether or not Floyd Mayweather's still going to have legs, you know, whether or not he's still going to be able to whether or not he's aged. I think that's what a lot of it's going to hinge on, because he's going to age sooner or later. That style always does.
Yeah, I think he's I was impressed with how confident Maidana was even after that fight. You know, he wasn't discouraged. He didn't seem to even think that he had lost the fight, you know, and I think it's a good attitude to have. So I think I expect that he will try to build off of that first performance.
Yeah, that was,
and like,
sorry to
no, go ahead, go ahead.
That was what he had said. Yeah, I'll give Floyd a rematch.
Yeah, exactly. it makes sense. You know, like I'm saying, like, yeah, it'd be cool to see Thurman or Porter get a crack. I think it's debatable whether, I mean, Porter's got a better resume. is a guy like Thurman really earned that fight, though, or is it just because he's likable and got a big punch and we want to see somebody like that? You know, Thurman's just
I'd
not quite
there
yet.
I'd rather see them fight each
other. Yeah, I would love
to. I'd rather
see
them fight each other.
And the winner of that, we would be really hyped. If one of those guys definitively beat the other while they were both undefeated, then that guy's like, it'd be awesome to see him fight Floyd.
Exactly.
Yeah, so, like, you know, one interesting thing I think to think about, I mean, just on the fantasy tip, you know, not to offend the purists, but, what if Floyd had like, dominated Maidana like everyone thought? Would he still be fighting in September? Because, like we said, there wasn't really a clear who would have gotten the fight. Would it have been Danny Garcia? Would it have, you know?
I don't know. Well, I think that the Herrera fight really dashed the hopes for putting Garcia in there. I think that after that, they were like, no, we can't sell that. That just wouldn't be able to sell. So I don't know if that would have happened or not. But that's why I think that this is really just – it was the only fight they could do.
They were looking at
short time. You know, I hope Maidana's getting paid a couple more bucks because he only made, you know, $1.5 million plus some other, you know, other bonuses or whatever. But still, I hope he's getting paid a little bit more this
time.
Well,
no, they're betting the whole purse on who wins.
Oh, well, actually, that actually leads right into what I was going to ask you about the gloves. Have you been reading about the whole glove thing?
No, I don't know how it got resolved. I assume that Floyd was going to make him wear just like 15-ounce pillows on his hands.
Well, okay, so for those who, I don't know, weren't paying attention or didn't know, just didn't see it, whatever, but right before the first fight, I think it was either the night before or the morning before, the morning of the fight, when they were choosing their gloves, Marcos Maidana was apparently under the impression, well, not only was he under the impression, but he, to my knowledge, had gotten custom gloves made with the gloves of his choice. And so then when they were, you know, quote-unquote choosing gloves, which is basically just presenting it in front of the commission and saying this is what we're using, you know, check them out and make them sure they're good, supposedly Floyd Mayweather and his team were like, fuck that, you're not using those gloves. Those gloves are like, you know, there's no padding, they're going to kill us, oh my God. And so then, you know, whatever, to make the fight, Marcos Maidana, of course, who had really no pull to say no, said okay, and then used the gloves that Floyd wanted him to use. And so now, in the last day or so, that has been the new, you know, sticking point or whatever during the promotion, is Floyd going to let Marcos Maidana use his – of course he's not going to. But so now Floyd, in the last day or so, has been saying that Marcos Maidana, the gloves that he wanted to use were like Louis Resto, who, of course, you know, was I hope I don't have to explain it to everybody, but was found to have removed padding in his gloves against Billy Collins, and I believe it was like 82 or 81 or something like that in New York, and that was what got Panama Lewis and Louis Resto banned for life from boxing. Anyway, so that's pretty fucking harsh accusation.
Well, yeah, and I mean, it's typical, right? I mean, like, of course, he wasn't talking about fighting with, like, you know, ripping out the padding and fighting with bare, you know, basically bare knuckle like that. I mean, it was just
At least he wasn't talking shit about abortions this time.
Yeah, of course. But Maidana was wanted to use a glove that was totally legit, approved by the commission. It was just, it's known to be more of a puncher's glove. Floyd didn't want it, you know, whatever. I mean, it was all, that was another kind of side element to that fight. Was like, it was great that Maidana had put up the effort that he did wearing those gloves. And like, we all remember when Pacquiao fought Morales and wanted to wear the puncher's glove and they wouldn't let him, and then he ends up losing a pretty close decision and gets the glove that he wants the next two fights and knocks him out. But, of course, he has the leverage to negotiate that, and Maidana doesn't.
Yeah. I mean, and you know what, to be totally honest, look, I'm not a glove expert. I have absolutely no idea whatsoever if the glove itself really made that big of a difference, or if, you know, maybe he would have actually hurt Floyd with his own gloves or something like that. I have no idea, dude. I really don't. The point is that it's more of a, you know, if nothing else, a psychological tactic. Basically, Floyd saying, no, you're going to use whatever fucking gloves I tell you to use. And that's that. So Maidana really doesn't have any, you know, leverage to say, no, I want to use my gloves. that's pretty much what it comes down to, I think. I could be wrong. Unless there's some type of, like, foul play with the gloves or some shit, and it's my understanding that there's not.
No, I mean, they showed this. They showed the scene on All Access, I think, last time on the epilogue episode, where you actually, their cameras were there when Floyd was looking at the gloves that they were going to choose, and he said, like, no, you can't use this one.
He was like, hell no.
Yeah, remember? Yeah, he, like, put it on. He's like, no, hell no. Yeah. But, I'm just going to assume that they were, you know, not illegal or anything like that, because, like, the inspector had just looked at them, too, and so obviously, you know, they adhere to the standard, but who knows? I mean, I'm sure it was probably some combination of that and some kind of mind games to just let, you know, let Maidana know who's in charge, who's in control. And that's what I thought was more impressive, not whether, you know, the actual gloves, whether they would have hurt him or not or whatever, but the fact that there was that whole fiasco and leading up to the fight, there was, you know, even questions of, like, is the fight going to be canceled? No, because they didn't agree to it until just a few, you know, that afternoon on Saturday, and it didn't rattle Maidana in the least bit.
No, and I guess if nothing else, he came into the fight, maybe he came into the fight a little bit more pissy because of it, I don't know. But, you know, it's just lame that it's even an issue. It's lame that it's even a thing.
Yep. That it is. What else you got? You know what I'm looking forward to is that Tyson Fury Chisora fight. When is that?
Yeah. Isn't that
Saturday?
This weekend too?
No, maybe it's next Saturday.
Oh, man. All right, now I'm going to look. No, that is not this weekend. All right, good. Well, shit, let's talk about it for a minute anyway. Who are you leaning towards?
I'm leaning towards Fury, you know. I think it all depends, like, what kind of shape Chisora shows up in, but I think Fury's just had a little bit less, for one thing, less wear and tear. And I don't think it's just better if he wins, because I would love to see Fury and Deontay Wilder after, have you seen all the, like, back and forth they've had on Twitter?
Oh, yeah. Well, I saw a little, it almost looks like a promotional poster for Deontay Wilder and, like, you know, some shit talk and stuff like that.
Yeah, this is going to, I mean, I think, yeah, Fury and Chisora, though, I mean, it's just, they're both, like, just kind of nuts. And I think Fury's just hilarious and has a really good personality and, you know, I guess Chisora was, like, really, you know, overweight in the first fight and looked like crap at the time. So who knows?
Well, you know, I have to say that pretty much my only exposure to Tyson Fury until, you know, the last maybe 2 years, 2.5 years, was that never-ending gif of him punching himself in the face. And so, you know, that was pretty easy to fucking make fun of. And I was like, all right, well, that guy's never going to go anywhere. And also on top of that, once I figured out that, like, you know, maybe he was skilled enough to kind of get on TV regularly, and then I started getting exposed to his personality, I was like, damn, that guy is super annoying as shit, and I hate him. And then I started, you know, well, at first, and then actually when I started following him, I was like, actually, you know what, he's pretty fucking funny.
He's
improving.
You think it's most of it's like tongue-in-cheek?
Yeah, I think that he's selling himself, and he's doing a good job.
Yeah, I think he's got an awesome personality. I mean, I love watching, you know, just seeing him talk shit to all various people. And
yeah, he's pretty funny.
And then, like, singing in the ring after that one fight. And, you know, he's just such a huge guy, and he's obviously, if nothing else, you know, he can punch. So I think it's good for boxing if he can, you know, get into a high-level fight. I mean, like, something like Fury and Wilder, I think that would be, like, one of the heavyweight fights I would most look forward to be honest.
And I hope that they do actually wind up, you know, making something like that because, well, I mean, all right, it's tough to say because when Derek Chisora is, when he seems to be in shape, when he seems to be fighting, you know, as a world-class type of guy, he's dangerous. He could punch pretty well. He's, you know, comes in pretty tenacious, but he seems to lose steam towards the end of the fight. So I have to think that overall Tyson Fury is probably the better fighter just in general. So if we're going to assume that Tyson Fury wins this fight, and I don't want to say it's a safe assumption, but I think that that's probably what's going to happen. If they do wind up pointing Tyson Fury and Deontay Wilder toward each other, that's kind of like a situation where, you know, where we were just talking about we were just talking about two guys we'd rather – Sean Porter and Keith Thurman.
Yeah, right,
rather
right,
than
right.
Seeing them get a shot at Floyd Mayweather, we'd rather see them fight each other at the very least to see who has a better shot of beating Floyd Mayweather. Same thing as, you know, Fury and Wilder, I would have to say. I would rather see them fight each other and produce a really good contender for Vlad Klitschko rather than, you know, go in more untested than they would be had they fought each other, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's an interesting fight at the very least, and there is that kind of
that element of it, like you said, where Chisora supposedly wasn't in very good shape, didn't really do very good the first time, you know, supposedly has a good training camp this time. So, I don't know. We'll see if it makes any difference, but I'm interested in it. That's coming up in the next week or two. But, yeah, at the very least, we have something, even if it's international, in the next week or two to kind of hold us over.
And Golovkin. I mean, that's always a...
That too.
That'll renew my passion for boxing for at least another like 2 months.
In our hearts, we're all just good boys.
So, yes, we are. Yeah, he is special. But you know, he's another one of those guys that, I mean, how old is Golovkin now? 31 or 32? I mean, there's, you know, the clock's ticking. I mean, we got to get this dude.
Yeah, no, it is.
Some mega fights fast here.
Yeah, sooner or later, and by sooner or later, I mean the next, like, year, if not less, he's really got to decide whether or not he's going to even stay at middleweight, because I can really see him being basically shut out of that discussion entirely. You know what I mean? It's like there's no point. There's no point in Miguel Cotto taking him on. There's no point in, you know, if Canelo were to beat Miguel Cotto, I'm sure Cotto would have a rematch clause, all this type of shit. So he's going to have to decide pretty soon whether or not he's going to stay at middleweight or move down, move up, whatever it is. So it's a bummer to see him frozen out of the picture that way, though.
Yeah, it's not really fair that we're, you know, we're asking him, like, no, if you want to be considered great, you have to move up 8 pounds and fight, like, one of the best, you know, toughest fighters in the whole sport, you know, and a guy that's not easy to look good against with Andre Ward. But at the same time, I mean, I think I salivate at the notion of Golovkin, you know, some fights he could have on the way to that up at 68.
Yeah.
If he got a fight with Frosch. Yeah.
Junior.
Chavez, two guys with just, you know, incredible chins. Now we've seen Frosch look a little vulnerable against, you know, Groves getting dropped. But you know, I mean, I think if Golovkin can score some back-to-back knockouts with two guys who have, like, never been stopped, and Frosch and Chavez, how huge the fight with Andre Ward would become. But then, of course, Andre Ward would probably be nowhere to be found.
We don't even know what the hell that guy's – what's going on with that guy anyway. Every like, month or so, he'll either tweet or have some, like, press release or some shit like that where he says, you know, I could still be fighting. Even though we're, like, in litigation, I could still be fighting.
Yeah, why?
And then he doesn't fight.
And, you know, on his track record, I mean, you can't say that Ward's ever ducked a challenge. He's basically beaten every other decent fighter in the division. So there's no reason to think that he wouldn't. I mean, and I think he definitely has that ego of a great fighter and that he thinks he's the best. You know, so
that's my best guess. That's my best guess, is that his ego's gotten out of hand so that he thinks he doesn't need any of these fights anymore. But I don't know what he's expecting. Like, who's he expecting to fight? I don't get it.
Well, I do think if Golovkin were to go up and make some noise at 168, it's probably more likely that somehow, you know, Ward gives him that fight rather than sticking around at 160, especially if the championship's going to be dominated by all these smaller guys. You know, Golovkin, you said, he's going to get shut out of the big fights for the real championship, and that sucks.
Yeah. Well, let's close on a positive note, hoping that Golovkin gets a big fight. I'm going to sacrifice a fucking chicken or a goat or something like that to make it happen, but I'll make it happen. Yeah. Well, we got about a minute left, so I guess we'll
shut
it down.
Bro.
But,
thanks, bro.
Yeah, thank you. And everybody, I guess, look forward to the HBO 2 in Moss card. Yeah, we'll see everybody next week. We'll recap that stuff if we can stay awake and watch everything. And in the meantime, check out my stuff, Patrick Connor at QueensburyRules.com, and check out James Foley's Bull Jive at BadLeftHook.com. We'll see everybody later. Take it easy.